From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today on the show, we check in with the senior senator from Michigan, Debbie Stabenow.
If we don't get our arms around this pandemic as a healthcare crisis, number one, we will not be able to safely reopen the economy, which we must do.
And travel season is upon us in Michigan, but it's going to look a lot different for businesses and communities up north.
We know that the occupancy won't be at the same levels it has been in the past, and that's okay. That gives more space for people to move around in. So I think most businesses on the island are looking towards the end of June to open.
Also, we wrap up our weekly visits with high school students feeling their way through the pandemic.
Being in like the unknown is like really strange, so we just talk about it all the time, which probably isn't great.
Those conversations coming your way on today's edition of Stateside. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Later this hour, summer vacation plans are up in the air, with places like Mackinac Island unlikely to reopen till late June. We'll check in with the iconic Mission Point Resort later this hour. But first, U.S. leaders are still debating whether to act again to stimulate the U.S. economy. Democratic House leaders have proposed a massive aid package, but top Republicans in the Senate are not on board. Meanwhile, the stock market had a rough week, and nearly 3 million laid-off workers applied for U.S. unemployment benefits last week. It's against this backdrop we reached out to Michigan's senior senator, Debbie Stabenow. She joins us from Washington, D.C. Senator Stabenow, welcome back to Stateside.
It's always good to be with you.
This week, you and some colleagues called on the Trump administration to fully fund federal commitments to mental health and substance abuse clinics, funding that's become jeopardized during the pandemic, like so many other things. It's not as if the structures that deal with physical health don't have their own funding problems at the moment. But is there a reason why, out of the trillions that have been allocated for emergency coronavirus funding, so little of it is allocated for mental health?
This is always what happens with mental health and addiction services, is that these services, which are critical, are not viewed as healthcare unless we are pushing to make it so. You know, I refer to it as healthcare above the neck as well as healthcare below the neck. Mm-hmm. And we know that in normal circumstances, one out of five people in our country will have some kind of mental illness in their lifetime. This is part of healthcare. And so what happens, though, is that we fund healthcare without those of us pushing, without people standing up and saying something. Over and over again, I've seen the mentally ill and people with addiction left behind. And so my colleagues and I are doing this major effort to say, at this moment when there's more need than ever under COVID-19, we cannot leave anybody behind. And that means anyone with a mental illness or with addiction.
Senator, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the latest COVID relief bill. The version most recently drafted by Democratic leaders in the House, it's called the HEROES Act, suggests relief for state and local governments, tribes, a great many things involved in here. And all told, it's a $3 trillion piece of legislation. What sounds realistic to you to pass in the Senate?
Well, I'm hopeful that we can pass what the House has done, and I want very much to support their efforts. When we talk about state and local governments, by the way, we're also talking our frontline workers, our healthcare workers, our mental health workers, I mean, that are in the community, as well as working through the state, public health, law enforcement, schools, I mean, all of those things that are so critical. So it is incredibly important that governors and mayors and county commissioners have stepped up to use their funding to rush in to protect people's health care and save lives, are now in a situation where they have to cut services and frontline workers right at a time when we need them the most.
Well, can a $3 trillion cost be borne?
Well, I think at this point in time, when we look at what Treasury and the Federal Reserve has done in putting forth more than that in terms of businesses, liquidity in the marketplace for businesses, this is every bit as important in providing what we need to tackle the health pandemic, to keep the first responders working, to be able to fund those things in public services and education and healthcare and law enforcement and all those other things that are critically important at this time. So, and I do want to give a shout out that they have over $3 billion in their bill for mental health and addiction services, which is a great step forward, and they make sure that the current funding, they expand funding for health systems and specifically talk about behavioral health, which is also important. And so they do recognize the importance of behavioral health here. But if we don't get our arms around this pandemic as a healthcare crisis, number one, we will not be able to safely reopen the economy, which we must do, by the way. We must do it. But it's not either or. We have to make sure people are safe, that we are managing this health crisis, and then we are opening things up in a smart way that supports businesses through testing, through information, so that we know that the people who are staying home are the people who have the virus and not everybody else, because we don't know. Information is absolutely critical right now. And so are public services. That's the big debate.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is maintaining a firm stance that if anything else is going to pass, that businesses need liability protection as they reopen. Will the final deal include that immunity, do you predict?
I can't imagine at the time that we're wrestling with just saving people's lives in this country and providing protections to frontline workers like nurses and doctors, and as well as those that are keeping our food supply going in a meatpacking plant, or somebody working in a grocery store, the post office, that's the only thing that he can think of right now is, you know, how to predominantly protect the interests of big business. I think we've got to start with the basics right now, and that is, how do we keep ourselves safe? How do we get our arms around this so that our schools can reopen, so that our businesses can reopen, that we can have some confidence that there's a coordinated national strategy on testing and finding a vaccine moving forward? I mean, those are the things that we need to be focused on right now.
You've said it's incumbent on America to face its healthcare issues in a more general sense. What do you think is an appropriate goal? Once the federal government can catch its breath, so to speak, what do you have in mind? Something like a Medicare for All plan that would ensure that all Americans had a basic minimum of coverage?
Well, we have to have a universal health care system that's affordable for everyone, and we can debate which structure that takes. But we have to move forward on that. And so whether it's making Medicare available as a public option, whether it's lowering the age to age 50, which I've suggested, certainly we have to tackle the cost of prescription drugs. And if Medicare was doing bulk purchasing, we'd dramatically drop the cost, like the VA has for our veterans. So we certainly have to tackle all of those things. I would also say, coming out of this, that we have to understand that public health is essential to fund. Unfortunately, in the past, it shouldn't be a partisan issue, but we've had Republican colleagues that really referred to public health funding infrastructure is somehow government waste, not necessary. We certainly are seeing that this is necessary right now. And we've got to make sure that the things put in place by previous presidents, including the comprehensive policy approaches and planning put together by the Obama administration, the national health pandemic experts that were in the National Security Council before, who were removed and fired by the current president, are put back, so that we are working continually with other countries on what we need to do in terms of future pandemics. The risk of viruses in this world now, where we're traveling all around the world all the time, the climate is changing, there are so many different factors that are affecting where viruses go and how they go. We have to take this very seriously. It's not just something now, but that something that could and will happen in the future if we're not prepared and if we're not serious about it. So public health infrastructure moving forward to protect us as part of our national security has to be done in a comprehensive way.
Just one more issue to raise, if you have time.
Sure.
You alluded to the fact that President Trump recently ordered America's meatpacking plants to stay open, invoking defense production powers. You have said that you would prefer a focus on workers' health. Given your long experience with agricultural issues, what do you think is the way to make sure that workers in such plants in Michigan and elsewhere, all of whom work for low wages under very close conditions, can stay healthy and get some kind of treatment if they are infected?
Well, we have to start with people's health. It's not, you know, when we say people are essential, it does not mean they're expendable. And without the proper equipment, protective equipment, without the efforts to test and see who should be going to work or not, without designing the workplace in a way that protects people, then that means they are expendable. And I reject that. And so, you know, I think with the meatpacking plants, and one of the things very concerning to me, and by the way, we need them to be open. We need an agriculture supply chain for our farmers and for all of us as consumers. I'm deeply involved in supporting efforts there. But the administration's response has been to order that plants be open, but to not require that OSHA and other safety standards be met for the workers when the plant opens. And then Mitch McConnell turns around and wants to argue for immunity, liability protections for a business like a meatpacking plant who didn't protect their workers. Now, that is shocking to me. So, you know, I'm fighting, my Democratic colleagues and I are fighting to put people first. And that does mean keeping the plant open safely. And when I look at, you know, our auto manufacturers working with the UAW in a thoughtful way, trying to change the way the plants are set up and the protective equipment and going through all of these things to do everything possible, working with their employees to try to figure out how to do this safely, that's what should be done with every employer, making sure that we are doing this the right way. And again, it's the only way we're going to have the economy open up, because ultimately we will be forced to close again if people feel like they're forced to be in a situation to work in unsafe circumstances, and then the virus spreads and we will see this happen again in terms of shutting down the economy and more deaths. Nobody wants that. So we can do it the right way if we work together.
Senator Stabenow, thanks for the check-in.
You're welcome.
Debbie Stabenow, Senator from Michigan. Coming up, two teenagers stuck at home in Michigan for the pandemic. That's after the break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Stateside. I'm April Baer.
Today, I'm exhausted. I don't know why.
I guess recently I've been dealing with boredom. I'm at home all the time. I'm not seeing anybody. Like, I'm not doing anything, so why can't I just do this work?
Almost the novelty of all of this has worn off, so I'm starting to just feel kind of restless.
Bored, exhausted, restless probably describes how a lot of Michigan's kids are feeling. They have been stuck at home for nearly 2 months now, since the COVID-19 outbreak sent everyone home. 1.5 million young people in Michigan are adjusting to this new normal. And today we wanted to talk to two of them. Kate Weiser is a sophomore at Community High School in Ann Arbor. And Scarlett London is with us. Well, she is a ninth grader at Community. Kate, Scarlett, nice to have you on Stateside. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
You know, right when schools closed down, we set up a hotline at Michigan Radio for you guys to call. And Kate and Scarlett, you both called a lot to talk about how your life has really changed. And I wanted to ask you to tell a little bit about what's different for you these days. Kate, can we start with you?
My family were being my parents are being pretty strict about like what we can and can't do. It's pretty much all inside. So we can like walk around the neighborhood, but that's pretty much it. And even like being outside on walks, it's nice to be outside, but like you don't even really see other people.
Yeah. Scarlett, what about you? Are you getting out of the house at all?
Well, I have been going on walks a lot, either with my family or by myself, but my parents are also being very strict about it. It's basically every time we leave the house, we're wearing a mask, we wash our hands before and after. We're also getting groceries delivered now, We go out sometimes, but we went to the Arb once or twice to take a walk.
The Arboretum, yeah.
Yes, and my parents were crazed by how many people were out there just with no protection or hanging out in large groups. So definitely made them nervous. And I think that from now on, we're just sticking to walks around the neighborhood.
What do you notice when you're out walking and you see other people? What do you notice about just how people are with each other?
Well, walking around my neighborhood, I saw a huge group of girls. Like, I counted, and there were 10 girls who I knew. One of them lives in the neighborhood, and I know her from there. And then it was, like, all of her friends from her school. And, like, none of them had masks on. They weren't social distancing, and they were just, like, walking through the neighborhood. It was wild to see, honestly. I was like, I haven't seen anybody in... I think this happened like 2 weeks ago, so I haven't seen anybody in 5 weeks, and you're walking around with 10 of your closest friends.
Wow.
Scarlett, have you observed anything different in just how people interact with each other in your neighborhood?
Well, I think that our neighborhood is actually being pretty careful about it. Every time I'm on a run or on a walk, everybody tries to stay as far away from each other as possible. But I have witnessed a couple of people hanging out that don't live together. And, you know, on the one hand, it kind of makes me mad because I worry for what, like, if they're spreading the disease. But on the other hand, like, I can't really help but feel envious because that's literally all I want to do right now is hang out with my friends.
When you are able to talk with friends on chats or text messages, do you find yourselves talking about the same things that you would have talked about before COVID-19? Scarlett, what about you?
I would say we try to. We try to talk about normal life, kind of take a break from the whole quarantine thing. But I've been FaceTiming my camp friends more and more. And, you know, there's really this huge if about whether or not camp is going to happen this year. And it's really not looking good. So we have been talking about what it will feel like if camp does get canceled. I've been going since fourth grade, and it's one of the most important things in my life. You know, every time I have a bad day during the school year, I always think to myself, oh, but camp's only however many months away. And the thought of not going is hard to process.
Kate, tell me about what your conversations are like.
Mine are actually pretty much with everybody. We're talking about what's going to happen next. When is the stay-at-home order going to end? Like, what is it even going to mean when it ends? Like, my close friends and I, like, we're pretty, like, we want to have control over situations. So, like, we just try to talk it out as much as possible. Like, what's going to happen next? Like, what's going on? Like, so being in, like, the unknown is, like, really strange. So we just talk about it all the time, which probably isn't great.
You know, my husband has this theory that today's parents are raising a generation of kids that either will only interact and socialize online or will only interact and socialize in person because of everything that's happening during COVID-19. Which camp do you think you'd be in after all this is over?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I really want to see my friends. I think that human interaction is a very important part of my life, and kind of not having that has definitely been hard. But I do want to make sure that when I am able to see my friends, I want to take all of the precautions and make sure that I'm staying safe, I guess.
Yeah. Scarlett, I think your dad works in the medical community, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. He's a neurologist at the U of M hospital.
Is he still going into work?
Yes. So every 2 weeks, I think it's 1 week on and then 2 weeks off. So every week that he's in the hospital, he's on the in-hospital consult service, which means that he's seeing patients in the hospital that are there for other reasons that happen to develop neurological problems while they're there. So he has actually been seeing a lot of COVID patients, I think one or two every day.
What's it like having him going into the office at a time when everybody's being told to stay home?
Yeah, well, it's kind of scary for us because we're all like kind of living in this fear of this disease. And then he's just going right in and seeing them just like that. So it's definitely been a stressor for us, but he's taking all of the precautions and the hospital's doing a really great job at organizing everything so that there's always enough equipment for everybody. So yeah, it hasn't been too bad.
I wanted to ask both of you a question about just how you're dealing with the confinement within your families. First of all, can I ask both of you, do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have a younger brother.
One younger brother. How about you, Scarlett?
I also have one younger brother.
What are you doing to keep the peace these days?
I think that developing routines for us is really important, so that we all know when everybody has their Zoom call, and we all kind of have separate work areas that we have kind of different parts of the house. So we've been trying to stay out of each other's way as much as we can.
When people in your family are maybe getting on each other's nerves, what are the points of contention? Is it like about what's going to be for dinner, or what's, you know, who's got control of the Netflix queue at any given moment?
I think mostly it's getting in each other's way. It was definitely hard at first to maneuver all of the schoolwork and just moving around the house and while everybody's on their different calls all at once. So
how are you handling doing schoolwork when at a time when there are basically no grades involved? And a lot of the regular rules are just sort of non-existent.
Yeah. For me, it has definitely made me realize that I just do most of the, like most of my classes, I'm just working on stuff for a grade. Like my two English classes are really the only classes where I'm like, this is something that I'm passionate about and I'm doing it because I want to do really well, versus like my other classes, I'm like, oh, I'm doing this just so I can get an A. And it's really hard to like find the motivation to keep doing the work when it's only pass fail.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Scarlett? Is that something you're struggling with too?
Actually, no. I think that for me, it's about the opposite. I'm not really passionate about schoolwork, but I feel like I need it to stay like productive. I think that the school's done a great job of giving us just enough work where we have something that we can wake up every day, do something, and feel like we got something done. And I think that it's been enough to make me get out of bed in the morning. So I think it's a good motivator.
I remember hearing that in Georgia, there was this moment where the governor said, we're not going to be doing any driver's ed testing.
Oh my God.
If you have your learner's permit, you now have a driver's license.
What?
That was crazy.
I believe that's since been revoked.
Like, that's bananas.
Oh my gosh. Because I actually did driver's ed while I was in quarantine, because I was scheduled to take it in March, I think. So we just had this giant Zoom call with everybody, and it was pretty rough, I will say. There were a lot of technical difficulties.
Wait, so have you done your practical hours yet, Scarlett?
No. We don't know when the test is going to be. We don't know when we're going to get to do our like rides with our instructor. We don't know when we're going to get to do our actual driving. So it's a huge question mark, because we learned all of this stuff and then who knows when we're going to take the test, you know?
Are you bummed about that?
Yeah, super bummed. I really want my permit, but it's not looking like that's actually going to end up happening till probably next year.
Well, I mean, this would be a fabulous time, I guess, to practice when there aren't a lot of people on the road. But on the upside, it's not like there's anywhere to go at the moment.
Right. Yeah. I mean, my parents have taken me to some parking lots and we've driven around the neighborhood, but I still can't get my permit until I take the test and drive with the instructor and all that, so...
You know, high school is a time when a lot of people are trying to figure out what their deal is. You know, who's really a good friend to them, what kind of friend they want to be, all the questions about what you should do after graduation and what you should do with the rest of your life. And among other things, COVID-19 has really kind of interrupted that process for a lot of people. Do you feel like you're very stuck in the moment right now?
Definitely. You know, I think that there's always a sense of FOMO, fear of missing out, that comes with high school. And now that's just kind of completely vanished.
Well, it's interesting that you say, fear of missing out, like, isn't really a thing. My daughter's a lot younger, but sometimes I see her, like, if she figures out that a couple of her friends are on a chat and she's not on it, she just loses it because she feels like she's missing that moment with them. But Scarlett, you're saying that that's not really what you're experiencing right now?
I feel like once we go back, I think that all of our relationships, or at least my relationships, it kind of feels like they're just going to pick up where they left off. But who really knows, you know?
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
Yeah, I'm feeling FOMO more as a like general, like I'm missing my high school experience, basically. I feel pretty lucky because I'm not a junior or a senior. Like, I don't have to do college visits right now. I'm not supposed to be taking any big tests right now. At our high school, you juniors go to prom, so I'm not missing prom. But I feel in like a greater sense, like I'm missing out on like being able to feel the changing seasons with my friends, like sitting out on our school lawn eating lunch. Like, I'm feeling like I'm missing out on way more.
Right. I completely agree. I think that the FOMO is kind of more about the high school experience, like Kate said. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the end of my freshman year and I won't really get to experience what that feels like at a new school. But I don't really feel like I'm missing too much because I still have 3 more years to go. Like Kate said, I really feel bad for the seniors and the juniors who are missing a lot of these memorable high school moments right now.
Is there any particular music or movies or books that are kind of getting you through this right now?
I've been listening to a lot more music. I've been listening to a lot of kind of summery songs that kind of make your mood go up, I guess. I listened to a lot of that stuff while I was at camp, so it kind of reminds me of summer and being with your friends and dancing in the rain and all that stuff that we used to do during summer.
It's funny, I hadn't really thought about the context of summer jams, but the music that people usually play when they're hanging out or, you know, cooking out or partying or something is going to sound a little different right now. Kate, what about you? What's on your playlist right now?
Yeah, I've been listening to a lot of like indie, I guess, like light, airy, happy music. And then also like TikTok songs. Like, I'll get songs off of TikTok, which is like, I feel like kind of goofy, but like I'll hear some music on TikTok and I'll be like, oh, I'm adding this to my playlist. I've also been like watching a lot of old YouTube videos, like from when I was younger that I watched, and like playing old video games. And it's like very nostalgic. It's a very nostalgic time for me.
Like what era of YouTube videos? What kind of stuff?
Okay. So we'll
totally take into account that this is your childhood.
Yes.
Your childhood list.
Yes. I used to watch Minecraft YouTube videos all the time when I was younger. And there are these two, like, the people that I watch the most, there are these two, like, women who live in England and they're, like, sisters and they play together. And I just think it's so happy and, like, so entertaining. So I've been watching their, like, old series that they did together, and it's so nice.
It's like the streaming game equivalent of comfort food.
Yeah, it is. I think that that's something that people have been going back to a lot, actually. Like, people are getting out their old, like, video game platforms. Like, I got out my old 3DS, too. And I think it's just kind of, like, this reach for, like, comfort, like you said.
A simpler time.
Mm-hmm, a simpler time.
Just one last question for both of you. Can you feel yourself getting ready for a long haul with this? Kate, well, could you answer the question first?
I don't know. I'm trying to look for like versus like, oh, how long is this going to last? I'm trying to look for more like what are like the things that I can look forward to? Like, what are some benchmarks that I can look forward to versus like how long is this social distancing thing going to last? Like, stuff like that.
Scarlett, how about you?
I agree entirely. The thing that I've been thinking about most is what I have to look forward to. So I'm trying to sort of mentally prepare myself for the idea that we're going to be in the house for longer, for months or weeks more. But I think that routines, like developing routines, have definitely played an important role. I think, like, at the beginning of quarantine, I was super kind of bummy. I was just laying in bed watching movies all day. And I think that getting outside more and exercising and forming routines has kind of helped me come to terms with the fact that we could very possibly be in quarantine for a lot longer. But having something to look forward to, I mean, whether it's camp or if camp doesn't happen, then, you know, next year seeing all my friends again, I think that that's the most important thing that I'm thinking about.
Ladies, thanks a lot for talking with us. We appreciate it. And I hope you're hanging in there.
Yeah, thank you so much, April.
That was Kate Weiser and Scarlett London, two students from Community High School in Ann Arbor. They're part of a new podcast that Michigan Radio launches next month. It's all about what teens are thinking about, stressing about, and laughing about. It's called Kids These Days. Support for Michigan Radio comes from the Michigan Health Endowment Fund and the Children's Foundation. After the break, summer's just around the corner, but when will our favorite summer vacation spots be open?
We know that the occupancy won't be at the same levels it has been in the past, and that's okay. So I think most businesses on the island are looking towards the end of June to open.
That's next on Stateside. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Memorial Day is right around the corner, the informal start to the summer travel season. And in Michigan, that would typically mean many families planning trips up north, maybe to campgrounds, sleeping bare dunes, or getting lost somewhere in time on Mackinac Island, as you hear in this 1940s Travel Talks movie.
There's a steamer in the harbor with her engine shot with fire, and our hearts have gone aboard her for the Island of Desire. This time, our destination is Mackinac Island, and the good ship upon which we are about to sail is being guided out into Lake Michigan, just off the Chicago shore, connecting with the largest chain of lakes in the world. And now our boat is underway with its unfailing compass pointed in the direction of Mackinac Island, one of the travel highlights of the Great Lakes. The village of Mackinac has a proud population of about 500 inhabitants who live here the year around. But during the summer season, the influx of visitors swells the population to several thousand. Somehow, the past and present seem to mingle together on this quaint island where automobiles have not yet been introduced, and the only means of vehicular transportation is by way of carriages and bicycles.
It may be a little strange to think about traveling right now. And for popular vacation spots like Mackinac Island, the question is, what will tourism be like in a pandemic year? Joining us now is Liz Ware. She's with Mission Point Resort, known for its vast lawn and those beautiful Adirondack chairs on Mackinac Island. Liz Ware, welcome to Stateside.
Hi, April. How are you?
I'm all right. How's the Mission Point community doing right now?
Well, we're doing all right. It's been a tough year for everyone in the hospitality industry, but we are looking forward to better times shortly.
Well, for those who haven't had the pleasure, could you describe what summer season is usually like at Mission Point and on Mackinac?
Absolutely. So summer season actually begins the last week of April when we open, and May begins with all the flowers and daffodils. We get pretty full in May, but come June, we're at about 100% occupancy from June through the middle of September. And then after kids go back to school, it slows down just a little bit. But right now, it's very slow as the island is not even open right now.
Yeah. What is happening at Mission Point at the moment? Are there any staff on site just to maintain facilities?
Absolutely. So we have about 33 people who live on property year-round. They are there. We have some essential workers who are working. So we have security and our maintenance team that have to be working right now. But when the governor lifted her last executive order where contractors could go back to work, we were fortunate enough to be able to bring our contractors back, because during the winter, we do a lot of work. And that had to stop when the stay home, stay safe executive order came into place. So we left several construction projects alone. We just dropped everything and everyone left the island. So now they're back and we're doing a lot of really great construction things that we can get done so that when we do open, they will be readily available.
I know that we're talking to you right now from the home where you spend the winter, but have you been on the island recently? I mean, is everything just in a complete state of shutdown?
Well, I have not been on the island. There was the stay home, stay safe. And then in addition to that, the mayor asked that if you didn't necessarily have to be on the island, to not go. And so I have adhered to that. And in addition to that, she also put, if you were from outside of the UP region, an extra 2-week quarantine, self-quarantine in place so that the residents on the island could be safe. And so I've opted to not do that and to stay home and keep everyone safe.
Sure. Have you seen any photos from colleagues about what the streets look like? I mean, it must just be a ghost town.
It was a ghost town. The whole island does construction over the winter. And when it all stopped, everything was left in place. And so you had equipment and all sorts of things on the streets that was just left in place. And now the contractors can come back. It is all starting to get cleaned up. And our favorite thing for those of us who are not on the island is to receive the pictures from those that are on the island. So there are great things happening. Like Mission Point is known for its gardens. And we have this one hill. We call it Daffodil Hill. And it's in full bloom right now. And so it's really hard for us not to be there to see it and to share it with the rest of the world. But we are taking pictures. We do share them on our Facebook page. And we hope that people will take a look at them because it brings back such wonderful memories of the island.
Governor Whitmer, at this point, has set the stay-at-home order until May 28th. But it's really anyone's guess as to whether we all will be able to leave our homes after that point. What's your game plan? Are you taking bookings for summer?
We are. So as you know, the island has put in a lot of security measures. There is concern about the health and safety of guests, employees, and residents. And so we have followed all of those with an eye to open, though. And so a lot of the restaurants and hotels are looking towards the end of June to open. We know that the occupancy won't be at the same levels it has been in the past, and that's okay. That gives more space for people to move around in. So I think most businesses on the island are looking towards the end of June to open.
Yeah. What do you think tourism is going to be like on the island this summer? It's hard to imagine, you know, the streets that are often crowded with people wandering from shop to shop down in town. And, you know, I mean, the bike paths, of course, I guess people could still ride around. But there's so many operational things that are going to have to change. What do you think it's going to look like?
Well, from every travel report that we've seen, and we're watching them all, there is a pent-up demand. And instead of flying, everyone is going to be taking road trips. And so, and then wide open spaces are going to be very important, obviously, and being outside. So for that reason, Mackinac Island is really a perfect destination. You know, you can drive up easily from the Detroit area. It's about 4 hours. The ferries are going to have social distancing. And once you get to the island, there are 80 miles of hiking and biking trails. Downtown will be significantly less crowded than it has been in the past. Social distancing will be in place at all of the retail shops, restaurants. And then when you get to a destination like Mission Point, we have 18 acres and they're known for our great lawn and the Adirondack chairs. And because the property is so large, the campus is so large, there is so much room to get out and have the social distancing and be outside and go for the bike rides. So we do anticipate that there is going to be a desire there. We also know that families want to reconnect with each other. And so the whole Zoom dinners together with family members, people enjoy that, but at the same time, they want to see each other. And so we're seeing a demand for, I would call it like a pop-up family reunion where several members of families are requesting from us dates where they can come up and have a small group together.
What's occupancy look like for July?
Well, I think a lot of properties on the island that had, July is a very popular wedding month. The larger weddings have scaled back, or they have moved. And so that has reduced the occupancy. We are not going to see the levels of occupancy, the 100% that we typically do. And if we are at about half of that, I think that we'll all be lucky.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, my guest is Liz Ware. She's Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Mission Point Resorts on Mackinac Island. Across the board, so many businesses in the hospitality industry are dealing with a difficult financial situation during the pandemic. And many of those are open year-round. What does it mean for a seasonal business like Mission Point that has a limited number of months of the year that can be booked?
Well, that's a really great question. So Mission Point and all island businesses are open for 6 months. When you take 2 months out of it, that's a third of your business, but it's even more than that. So for a property like Mission Point, we do a lot of group business, a lot of weddings, and a lot of events. So those larger weddings, events, and group pieces of business that were booked sometimes years in advance have either canceled or postponed. So it's not just not being open for 2 months. It lasts throughout the whole season. And it is financially, it's very, very difficult. Our family purchased Mission Point a little over 5 years ago. Since then, we've put $12 million into renovations on the property. This past winter, we did about $2.5 million alone that we're finishing. So if we're going forward, all of the monies that we have made on the property have been reinvested in the property. And when you lose a large amount of revenue in one season, it delays your ability to do future capital improvements to the property. And for those of us who work there and love Mission Point, it's been our passion to bring this beautiful property back to life. And to have to slow that down a little bit is very hard for us because we are quite committed to it. But we're going to be doing everything we can possibly moving forward.
You know, it's not hard to see how social distancing rules might be enforced within the confines of a business like Mission Point. But I just keep thinking about the more public spaces on the island and, you know, people crushing in taffy shops. We know that there have been places in Michigan where it's been harder to get people to adhere to social distancing rules. And like you say, there are all these pent-up feelings. Do you worry about crowds and how physical distancing can be enforced on the island more generally?
Sure. So I think everyone on the island worries about that. And so Mackinac created a Mackinac Island Health Task Force, which is made up of many different entities, including the health department, the hospital system, the mayor's office, the city council, the EMS, and local businesses. And so all of those things that you're talking about are things that we're thinking about as well, in how to make sure that we do the social distancing correctly so that guests feel safe. We know that the number one thing that people want to know when they're traveling is that there are going to be safety precautions in place. We take that very seriously, and we are all working as a community to put those protocols in place.
How do you balance the threat of potentially spreading COVID across the state with the very pressing financial needs that are facing folks on Mackinac Island?
Well, first and foremost, it is following the guidelines that are set forth through government entities, the CDC, who, and there are a lot of other additional resources. U.S. Travel and Tourism has put together a comprehensive package of protocols that are recommended. You have American Hotel Lodging Association doing things as well. So everyone is looking for best practices, but first and foremost, it's what is going to be dictated by government regulations in the CDC. And so we are following those very carefully, and they change all the time. So we have full-time, I watch this stuff every single day. Our team watches it every day, and everyone on the island does. So we're all committed to making sure that the right protocols and procedures and safety is first.
Well, what additional measures do you have to consider for folks like cleaning crews and wait staff who might come into contact with people or rooms where somebody who was infected might be?
Sure. So we have a complete COVID-19 action plan in place. In fact, our action plan, we gave it out as a template for other hotels and businesses on the island to use if they chose to. So we will have additional cleaning procedures in place. We will have the plexiglass in place at check-in. We will have a lot of signage. We're looking at electrostatic disinfectant cleaners for the rooms. Obviously, the high touch point places, we're working with Ecolab and the CDC recommended disinfectants. In our restaurants, there is a whole set of protocol, including the social distancing that's in place, wearing the face masks, all of those things, every single one of those, as it relates to the entire guest journey to the island and to booking a hotel, we have a plan in place for each time in each way we interact with our guests.
Do you think you're going to make it up north this summer at all yourself?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As soon as the governor allows, I will be up north. I cannot wait.
You mentioned that season opens at the end of April. I take it under normal circumstances, you'd already be there at this point?
Under normal circumstances, I would have been there about the beginning of April.
Liz, do you worry about any of the businesses on the island that might not make it through?
I do. We're all a community. You know, Mackinac Island, the businesses there, 99% of them are family owned. And people have owned these businesses for a long time. We are a community. We are all working together. We're all talking together. Absolutely, I do. It's been a difficult time for everyone, but these are friends. And we cherish each other. We don't often get to see each other in the summer because we're all working. Our winter time together is really special because that's a time that we can all become a community again. And we certainly hope that everyone survives this.
Liz Ware is Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Mission Point Resort on Mackinac Island. Liz, please send our best to everybody up at Mission Point and any folks you know in Mackinac. And thanks for your time today.
Thank you. And April, we hope to see you up on the island this summer as well.
Fingers crossed.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
When the Jesuit missionaries first came here, they brought with them tiny bushes of lilacs, which they since grown and spread throughout the island. In the month of June, the perfume of these lilacs fills the air with fragrance and inspires a spirit of romance, which is fittingly expressed in Leslie Kirk's song, entitled, When It's Lilac Time on Mackinac Island.
When it's lilac time on Mackinac Island, I'll dream. Lilac time on Mackinac Island, I'm coming back for you.
And once again, darling, there'll be joy without end. So wake my love and be true.
On this romantic isle, at least, it seems that God's in his heaven and all's right with the world. And it is with this thought that we say farewell to Mackinac Island, pride of the Great Lakes.
That's our show for today. Producers are Laura Weber-Davis, Mercedes Mejia, April Van Buren, and Mike Blank. With our interns' help, Leah Baldori, Catherine Newen, Nell Ovitt, and Olive Scott. Stateside's a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm April Baer. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we'll see you next week.